Welcome to Jay Madison's Rural America. It's a journey through the stories impacting rural economies and country lifestyles. Jay Madison's Rural America is also a production of Jefferson County Economic Development. Now here's Jay.
Hey there, folks. This is Jay Madison with Jay Madison's Rural America. Good to be talking with you all today. Hope you've had a fantastic past week. We're very excited. We've got our superstar co-host, Mr. Ron Robbins, on the phone with us. It's good to have you back on the phone with us, Ron.
Hey, Jay. Good morning. I'm on my way driving back up from Florida, so we're ready to roll for another year.
All right. So we just want to clarify for the audience, you are driving hands-free, correct?
I am. Yes, sir.
We don't want anybody going, oh, he shouldn't be doing that. So he does have his hands on the steering wheel and no cell phone in his hands. He's got his little ear pods or whatever you use there, Ron, right?
Yes. Yeah, I'm on my Bluetooth here, and my hands are 10 and 2.
Okay? All right, very good. Now, you just you were telling me before we actually started recording that you're coming up along the Susquehanna River right now, and it's rolling pretty good from what you see.
Yeah, I'm actually just came through Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and coming up along the Susquehanna here, and there's a lot of flood warnings out. Of course, everybody this past week, I guess, right, with these fronts coming across, had a lot of rain. You guys had a little bit of snow, but I think as you went east into eastern New York and the Adirondacks and over into Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine, they actually had a lot of snow.
Yes. Maine, I think, was up to 2 feet of snow from what I remember. So there's been a lot of moisture in the sky east and south of us. Fortunately, here in, you know, the Watertown, Jefferson County area, we haven't had as much, but elsewhere, yeah, there's been a lot of snowfall, a lot of rain, and there's another system that's going to come through next week. So not a real big break coming up that I can see. Luckily, I don't think it's going to impact eclipse watching here, which we're going to talk about the eclipse here shortly. But I think we'll be clear on Monday, April 8th, for the eclipse here in Watertown. Maybe not much farther west, but here in Watertown, I think we're going to be clear. So that'll be good. Yeah, it's good to have you coming back up. Now, you missed the Dr. Cole event.
Yeah, so, you know, the feedback from that, I had to fly back down to Florida that week, and then the kids came down for Easter, and so I was not there for the event, but of course we did the podcast prior to the event, and feedback I've gotten from folks I've talked to was just fantastic. So what was your take on the event, Jay? We took a little different format this year. Went up to JCC and did an evening event. And so give us an overview of that.
Well, to be honest with you, Ron, I'm really worried.
It went so good that
I set that one up, Ron. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm worried. How do we do better next year? It went as well as I could ever hope. And for listeners that might not be aware, it might be your first podcast you're listening to, last week we had Dr. David Cole, who is a professor emeritus from Virginia Tech. He is one of the world's leading agricultural economists and travels all over the United States and internationally doing programs, speaking to groups, banking groups, and so on about, number one, geopolitical events and how they impact agriculture, the economy, our food supply, and so on. So we were very fortunate to have Dr. Cole up here to do a program at Jefferson Community College, which he is an alumnus, I think you say, alumnus of Jefferson Community College and of Belleville Henderson School District here in Jefferson County before he went on to achieve the acclaim that he has. So a phenomenal event, Ron, really, really well. It was, when I walked into they call it the amphitheater, the big auditorium, if you will, where we held the event. I had gone out to sort of shoo people in. By the time I went back in, and looked at the audience. I'm like, oh, I'm running out of seats here pretty quickly. Yeah. I mean, it was a really nice surprise. You know, I had an idea that we were going to be pretty close to full. Man, it was impressive when I walked back in and said, oh, I don't have that many seats left. And I knew there were still some people out in the reception area. So it was really exciting. And he just wowed the crowd like he always does. He's such a phenomenal speaker.
Yeah, well, he is. And, you know, this year, Jay, you know, as you know, I was part of the planning process for this. And, you know, we moved from a day event to an evening event, had it much more informal, had a meet and greet with the speaker, made an effort to involve the overall business community and, of course, the college. And I really applaud you for pulling this off. I think, you know, JCC is such a, you know, it's such a gem for our area. And, you know, as a lot of these colleges, community colleges and others, you know, struggle with enrollment and that sort of thing, you know, the more we can pull together the resources that we have and utilize those resources, I just think is awesome. So really want to applaud you for a great job of pulling this off. And yes, it will be tough to top this next year, but hey, we'll get working on it fairly soon here and start thinking about it again.
That is true, Ron. Yeah, we have an Ag Council meeting coming up next week, and give credit to you and all of the Jefferson County Agricultural Development Council for helping plan and implement having Dr. Cole come up. And I just want to give a shout out to some of our sponsors, Midway International Logistics, Casanova Equipment Company, Great Lakes Cheese, Old McDonald's Farm, Jefferson County Public Health Services, the Cheese Store of Northern New York, the Taste New York store up there at the Thousand Islands Bridge, Mercrest Farm, Farm Credit East, Farm Bureau of Jefferson County, North Harbor Dairy, Old McDonald's Farm. I think I said you guys already, but yeah. We just had a great list of supporters for the event that have, and they're not only helping with the Dr. Cole event that just happened, they're also sponsoring the Jefferson County Dairy Parade coming up on June 7th. So, yeah, it went really well, and we've got our work cut out for us, but that's okay.
Of course, you've got the Dairy Parade coming up in June, and yep, you've June got 7th. A lot of things planned for that. But, of course, you're a glutton for punishment because you're getting yourself involved in this whole eclipse festivities, I hear.
Yeah, I'm sort of wondering what did I do, Ron, because I have a funny feeling I'm going to be standing in the middle of about 10,000 people at Thompson Park on Monday, April 8th with a microphone and a television camera in my face. And if that doesn't draw people to you, nothing will. So I'm preparing myself for the onslaught.
It really looks like Jefferson County and East has probably the best chance to have clear skies, like you said earlier. And I'll tell you, I'm almost a little nervous. I mean, I think it's just going to be overwhelming. I think we're going to have a lot of people coming up from the southern tier. We're going to have people coming down out of Canada. You know, what's your thoughts here, Jay? I mean, it's a once in a lifetime event for us. So,
well, and as
we'll
our
listeners,
yeah, as our listeners know, you and I do follow the weather pretty closely, anyways. And I've been following it for this, especially. I think it's safe to say that of the entire path of the eclipse, the path of totality, they call it. From the time that gets into the United States to the time it exits, you're really a lot of that path is going to be under at least some cloud cover. And that does drive people, the more avid eclipse watchers who travel to catch the eclipse, they will go wherever the best forecast is. Because, of course, if you're going to spend money to travel to see the eclipse, you want to make sure you see it. And right now from, I would say, central, you know, the Finger Lakes region of New York State, north and east, is probably the best place of the total path of the eclipse to watch it. Right now, it looks like we have clear skies, you know, sunny, obviously. Temperatures will be probably mid to high 50s at Thompson Park here in Watertown. So we really are, I think, the best place. And national news media has picked up on that, which is making me wicked nervous. And, you know, Canada, my family doctor, he's from Canada. He lives in Canada most of the time. He was telling me, Jay, our news up here is saying that Watertown, New York is probably going to be the best place anywhere to watch the eclipse. And I'm like, really? Yeah. And he said, yeah. And then all of a sudden, US Today. And I can't imagine what it's going to be like. I can't imagine what Watertown Airport is going to be like. I know they already had a ton of flights booked to see the eclipse. That was before a lot of the rest of the path, you know, got socked in with clouds. So we may have an airport full of, it might be interesting to go if you're into celebrity watching. I have a funny feeling Watertown Airport might be the place to be on Monday, April 8th. So, because
I think we're going to have a few private jets rolling in there, maybe, you think?
Well, there was already 70 registered to land at, you know, they had filed their flight paths or whatever it is. That was a couple weeks ago that I heard that figure. So now I'm wondering how many planes are going to be coming in there. It might be pretty interesting. it's going to be crazy. I'll be broadcast for anybody that's interested. I'll be one of the on air hosts, for the live stream. It'll be available on the internet. The live stream with NBCWatertown.com. That's NBCWatertown.com. We're going to start the live stream around 10 a.m. and go until 5 p.m., I believe it is. Now, some of that will be stuff that we go out, we record, we bring back, they air it. The other concern we have is because there's going to be so many people walking around with their cell phones, the internet connection, which is important to do a live stream with, might be in and out. So just be prepared. It might not be perfect the whole day, but we're going to give it our best shot. And that's on NBCWatertown.com. They'll be doing a live stream, or you're attempting to do a live stream for the entire events, not just the eclipse, but all of the activities occurring up there at Thompson Park. So it's going to be a busy, busy morning.
Well, it sure is. And of course, we can't forget that, you know, while a lot of businesses are closed for the day, schools are obviously closed. So that'll, you know, take down some of the traffic. But, you know, the rural, you know, we still are in an area where we're a rural area and a lot of things have to happen. And especially our farms, you know, products need to, milk trucks need to go, feed trucks need to come in, equipment needs to be on the road. So hopefully everybody is patient and, you know, that's one of my big concerns. I know we've told, you know, the products that we need to move on Monday, we've told our guys plan on getting rolling really early in the morning, 3-4 o'clock in the morning, you know, to get feed delivered, get grain delivered, get the milk out, so we can keep as much traffic off the road as possible that day. And
that
I
is,
think that's a concern with, you know, around the area.
Yeah. So. And that is an important message that, our farms, local businesses that have to be on the road, need to plan accordingly because, you know, I would expect around 10 a.m. that there's going to be a pretty massive wave of people starting to flow into Jefferson County and the Watertown area. And the main highways, you know, Interstate 81, U.S. Route 11, New York State Route 3, New York State Route 12, you know, the main arteries coming in and out of the Watertown area. I have a feeling they're going to be very busy, say 10 o'clock and afterwards. So yeah, definitely want to plan accordingly. and be safe and be patient as you're traveling around the area.
All right. Well, we'll plan for the worst and hope for the best, I guess, when it comes to the eclipse, and see how this comes off.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Lots of other things have been, it sure will.
Yeah.
Lots of other things going on. We since we had our last podcast, we had the bridge collapse in Baltimore. Just a horrific event. Hard to even believe. I woke up at, I don't know, my phone was beeping that morning like at like 4:30, and of course there was text messages and news feeds and other things coming across. And you know, you look at it, and a bridge is falling into the river there in Baltimore, being hit by a ship. So that port is pretty important to agriculture, and I thought maybe we should talk about that for a minute, Jay.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you, Ron. I'm glad you brought it up. You know, same thing. I had the same reaction when I got up and turned the news on in the morning. I said, "Whoa, this is kind of crazy to see a massive container ship had crashed into a bridge and to see how that bridge just, you might expect, you know, the pier obviously that it crashed into and then a couple sections of decking to collapse. But man, that thing, when it went, it just dominoed and took everything down so fast. And, you know, certainly tragic, the loss of life. So lucky that the ship was able to radio a mayday quickly, and they were able to get, at least from what I understand, some of the traffic stopped before that bridge collapsed, because otherwise it could have been significantly worse as far as loss of life and injuries. As you're saying, Ron, the impact on the economy is significant. Now, I think you were telling me at the time that much of the farm equipment that comes in and out of the United States on the East Coast goes through the Port of Baltimore.
That's correct, Jay. There's basically two ports that are set up to handle construction equipment, farm equipment. Baltimore is the main one. Savannah does a little bit. Baltimore is pretty much it. And a lot of farm equipment, a lot of John Deere, Ford New Holland, Case International, others are made in Europe. Certain models are made in Europe. You know, while John Deere is a U.S. company and make combines and large tractors and a lot of their bigger equipment here in the U.S., a lot of their mid-sized equipment gets made in Germany. Case International and Ford New Holland the same way gets made in France and Germany and Italy. That equipment all comes in through the Port of Baltimore. Forage harvesters, the Kloss forage harvester, which is very popular in the U.S., that's made in Germany. That all comes in there. And, of course, all the parts for those pieces of equipment come in and out of Baltimore. The road infrastructure going in and out of that port is set up, and that bridge was set up, all the approaches and everything to that bridge was set up to handle oversized loads.
Wow.
As well as hazardous material, things like nitrogen fertilizers, compressed natural gas, propane, liquid propane, those types of things. So without that bridge, the other options are not very good, number one, because the roads aren't designed for oversized load. And while, you know, it'll be able, they'll figure it out over time. So even, you know, even with that channel open back up at some point here and ships coming and going, getting the trucks in and out of that port is going to be very, very difficult. And there's definitely going to be a disruption here in for the next several months. And, of course, we're coming into busy season, fertilizer being a main ingredient coming into that port. And so already, you know, a lot of that's having to be diverted. And everybody says, well, you can just divert to another port.
Right.
But they don't understand the infrastructure doesn't exist in other ports.
Right.
You know, not just the roads and bridges, but the storage tanks, the space, you know, the ability to offload big equipment, places to put it when you get it offloaded. that just doesn't exist in other places.
Well, and that's very true. And it's not a matter of just a boat pulling up to the dock and the crane unloads on the dock and things drive away. It takes, number one, there's a certain amount of dock space. If you've screwed up being able to get into there, all right, and a ship has to get diverted to some other dock, you know, some other port, excuse me, impacting that other port and the amount of traffic in and out. So you're already starting to create that ripple effect. And then, like you said, does that other port have the same capacity to unload those ships that are getting diverted there until the port of Baltimore can be completely opened up again? It's a lot bigger than what people saw on the surface, and hopefully they can get those channels opened up again. But it's not until it's completely back to, you know, normal traffic. You know, it's going to ripple effect through the economy of not just here in the United States, but also the destinations of, you know, the ships that were carrying export products out of here.
Yeah, and you know, we all know how vulnerable our supply chain sector is. We saw that during COVID, and you know, our port systems are very, very vulnerable. I mean, they're at capacity. They're you know, they don't have extra space in a lot of cases. I mean, the Port of Newark, Philadelphia, go on down to Richmond, Virginia. I mean, you go in those ports. We have our trucks go in and out of a lot of those ports fairly regular basis. It's not a fun experience to get in and out of there on a good. So then you throw something like this into the mix, and it really gets interesting.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we'll continue to watch that issue and see how things progress. Hopefully, they can minimize the amount of time that it takes to get things open back up and traffic back to normal through there. So, hey, Ron,
you know, it's pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting. Just one last thing, Jay, this happened and it was front and center from a news perspective for a few days, but it's funny how our news cycles change so fast. And a lot of this important news just gets lost in shuffle on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest with you. I expected to get a call for interviews from our local news media on it, but they never picked up on, you know, the potential impact of agriculture as far as I could see. I was kind of surprised. They moved on quickly from that, and I never heard anything, you know, anybody reaching out to me about what were going to be the impacts to agriculture. So, that's the way they are.
That's our news cycles nowadays.
Yep.
So,
yep.
We've got a couple of things planned here going forward, right? For podcasts.
And, oh yeah. We're working on trying to get somebody to speak to us about the avian flu epidemic that's going on out there right now. I haven't been able to make that contact yet, but we are working on it. But what are you hearing, Ron, about the impacts of avian flu, and especially now that it has crossed over into our livestock herds?
Yeah, so this the avian flu outbreak in dairy cows, first case was reported somewhere around the end of the second week of February in a very large dairy herd in Texas. First time that we've seen avian influenza, which generally is carried by wild bird and normally impacts chickens, turkeys and those type of animals. Well, now we have that jumped into lactating dairy cows, which now spread. They've been pretty isolated cases. In most cases, it has moved up into the Midwest, Idaho, Michigan. There's a case reported yesterday in Ohio on a large farm there. But they think it's because those farms have brought a lot of the large dairies in the upper Midwest raise all their young stock down in Texas and Kansas.
Oh, okay.
And so they think that it's being brought up. The cows are being used as a carrier. And there's concern that, you know, with the waterfowl migration, geese and duck, moving north, but that's, you know, they're carrying it as well. The good news is it has a pretty significant impact on the dairy herd for about a week. They severe diarrhea, fevers, loss of milk production, but herds tend to bounce back. It gets pretty scary for 3 or 4 days from what I'm hearing, but, you know, it's not a lasting effect. Cows, you know, don't die. They just get super sick like you and I would when we get the flu, and then they tend to bounce back. So far, it's been somewhat of a non-event. Obviously, milk supply is safe because milk is pasteurized. Potential, you know, bacteria or anything would be eliminated in the pasteurization
process. Yeah, and that's why we pasteurize milk, is to make sure that any potential bacteria or anything like that could potentially be in the milk and might be harmful to humans if they consume it, is not there. It's killed in the pasteurization process. So it makes sure that the milk is safe to drink for humans. So, yeah, just want to point that out to any of our listeners that might be going, oh, wait a minute. No, the milk is safe. That's why we pasteurize milk, is to just make sure nothing like this can impact humans. So it's a very safe, nutritious product.
Yeah, so, and you know, some say that there was two factors in Texas that kind of led this disease to pop up the way it did was, one, there was a very strong, active Pacific jet stream coming out of the far Pacific, Southeast Asia, coming up across the Pacific at about 800 miles an hour. Yeah. And actually took migrating birds farther than they would normally go. And then the second was the big wildfires in Texas and Oklahoma, displacing an awful lot of birds and their habitat and moving them, and they were vulnerable to this virus. So those two things have kind of been talked about as being a combination of just, you know, being a perfect storm, if you will, of moving birds and having this thing develop the way it did.
Right, right. And again, not any lethality to it for dairy cows or other livestock, just it makes them very sick from what I've heard.
No, that's absolutely the case. Everybody, when they first get this, it goes through the herd pretty rapidly. You know, we've had in our area what we call winter dysentery, you know, and about every 3 years your herd will build immunity. It's a spring virus that, you know, nobody's ever really thought too much about it. It kind of just goes through the herd. Cows get sick, milk production. So this avian flu kind of mirrors that, actually. And but then a couple weeks, everything's back to normal, and you know, you just, herd managers are staying on top of it. You know, dairy farms are monitoring herd health on a daily basis. Most of the bigger herd, you know, do have monitoring systems on their cows, so they activity systems, so they know cows' movements and takes their temperature when they come into the milking parlor. We have all, and certainly, you know, people coming on the farm, salesmen, delivery trucks, that type of thing. We've really beefed up biosecurity so that, you know, especially if they're going from one farm to another, so that, or, you know, we've all beefed up biosecurity measures on the farm and making sure that we are educating delivery truck drivers that go from farm to farm to make sure they're, you know, washing their shoes and washing their hands and that type of thing when they come on the farm.
Biosecurity measures, which should always be in place anyways, but especially right now, farms should be stepping up their biosecurity measures to minimize the spread of avian flu into their herd. So, yeah, very important. Very important. Yeah. Well, all right, sir. I think we've run out of time here. So how many hours out are you?
Oh, about 4 hours out. So I'll be home this afternoon, Jay, and maybe we can line up a speaker to talk a little bit more about avian flu, and I'll be in the studio with you next week, and by then we will have the eclipse will have come and gone, and we'll know how we did. So.
Yeah. And actually, while we've been talking, this interesting coincidence, while we've been talking, one of the reporters from Channel 7 has been texting me about doing a interview with a farm on avian flu. So Interesting coincidence. while we're talking, they're asking about doing a story on it. So that'll be my task as soon as we get done with the podcast here, sir.
Okay.
But all right. Well, hey, safe travels, and remember to wear your glasses when you're watching the eclipse on Monday. We don't need anybody with their eyeballs burned out. Have safe travels. We'll see you shortly.
Yes, we'll be back in touch next week, Jay. Good luck.
All right. Well, folks, that's a wrap on the podcast for today. Thank you very much for listening in, and I hope you join us for every podcast of Jay Madison's Rural America.
Thank you for tuning in to Jay Madison's Rural America. Make sure to join us weekly. If you have any questions about the show, call Jay at 315-782-5865. For more information, visit www.agricultureevents.com or jcida.com. Until next time, thanks for tuning in to Jay Madison's Rural America.